You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, October 19th, 2017.
What it really comes down to is a systemic, fundamental change at the top, at the very top of the ladder, and doing our best to be a dissenting voice for the people who really need it, the disadvantaged people who really need it in this country.
Brandon Hood is one of four Democrats vying for the nomination to take on incumbent Republican Congressman Trey Hollingsworth. As Hood tells Book Talk's Michael Glab later in this segment, he gets his inspiration from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. That interview is coming up later in the show on Big Talk.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks community members for their opinions on needle exchange programs. But first, these local headlines.
Monroe County Commissioners are calling on the Richmond Bean Blossom Community School Board to rethink closing Steinsville Elementary School. The RBB School Board is considering closing the rural elementary school because of a steady decline in enrollment. Currently, the school has about 150 students. Commissioner Patrick Stofers voiced his support for keeping Steinville Elementary open, saying it's not too late for the RBB officials to change their mind.
You know, that school is the center of activity in that town, and closing it would be a dagger to the heart of the Steinsville community. And I implore the school board to walk it back.
Stofers cited a number of investments the county has made in Steinsville in recent years that benefit the elementary school, including a $1.5 million grant to RBB for STEM curriculum development.
It's been suggested in the newspaper that they're contemplating a bond issue of $9.8 million for a variety of things, including fancy new athletic facilities. Well, given the choice, I choose Steinsville over fancy new athletic facilities every day of the week.
Commissioners Amanda Barge and Julie Thomas also voiced their support, citing in particular concerns about increased transit times for Steinsville students.
I would add to that that I've heard a lot of concerns from parents in the area about the fact that their children would have to be on the school bus for an extra hour each way each day. So it's 2 hours a day that they're sitting on a bus because they're so far removed from the other schools. So it's a really important issue. It's a safety issue. It's great that the kids in Steinsville can walk to school. I mean, that's not something you see very often, and it would be really difficult to see that school close.
The Monroe County Commissioners also approved an ordinance creating an opioid awareness commission. County Attorney Jeff Cockrell said the commission's mission is to help the community to address the current opioid crisis.
Basically, this group would duties would be to plan and organize the community conversation for opioid, including the yearly summit, collaborate with the stakeholders, gather information on opioid and issues and concerns, and then report its activities to you.
The 13-member Opioid Commission will be composed of representatives from the Monroe County Council, the Monroe County Commission, the Bloomington City Council, and the Monroe County Health Department. All appointees will be approved by the Monroe County Commissioners. Representatives from the community at large will also be included in the Opioid Commission. Commissioner Barge took the opportunity to comment on the decision on Tuesday by Lawrence County officials to discontinue their needle exchange program.
I was in Lawrence County yesterday, and they voted to discontinue their syringe exchange program, avoiding the recommendations of the Indiana Association of Counties, the National Association of Counties, the CDC, SAMHSA, American Medical Association, the governor. And I just want to say how, even though I'm newer to this board, I want to thank both of my colleagues for approving that and following the recommendation of science as opposed to religion, which is what the commissioner said, is that we should just pray away our weaknesses. So I want to just point that out and thank the community for being so supportive here in Monroe County working on this issue, because we know what works.
Commissioner Barge was one of the organizers of last month's Monroe County Opioid Summit.
The city of Bloomington is replacing water mains across town, causing disruptions in water services. City of Bloomington Utilities Director Adam Wason said that many of the water mains, the underground pipes that provide water throughout the city, are over 100 years old. The replacement project is expected to cost the city about $1.8 million. A scheduled water outage for South Side residents took effect yesterday. The utilities department laid a new pipe along Church Lane in Clear Creek.
The city of Bloomington's lawsuit against Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb will not be dismissed. According to a press release issued earlier today, a judge dismissed Governor Holcomb's motion to dismiss the suit on October 3rd. Holcomb's counsel argued that they were not the correct defendants in the suit, which challenges the constitutionality of Section 161 of Public Law 217. That law, pushed through as an amendment to the state budget earlier this year, halted Bloomington's attempted annexation of areas in Monroe County. Judge Frank Nardi's order found that Governor Holcomb, quote, is the appropriate defendant in this case, unquote. The city received notice of the ruling today. The city of Bloomington's legal department intends to proceed with discovery, a pretrial procedure in which both parties bring forward their evidence. The governor has 30 days to appeal Judge Nardi's decision. In order for the state to appeal, it must first ask Judge Nardi for permission to make the appeal and then ask the Court of Appeals to accept it. Bloomington's lawsuit alleges that the governor's office overstepped their bounds in accepting the state legislature's five-year moratorium on Bloomington's annexation efforts. Judge Nardi's order will be available on WFHB's website, wfhb.org, after this broadcast. For WFHB News, I'm Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems, firms, and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Brandon Hood is a house painter and a lifelong resident of Central Indiana. He's decided to join the three other Democratic challengers for Republican Trey Hollingsworth's 9th district seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. Hood leans on his down-home, working-class roots as a major selling point for his candidacy. He was inspired to get into the political fray by the words and positions of Bernie Sanders. He and his campaign manager, Helen Plagman, join Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guests in the studio, and that's two guests. One, Brandon Hood, a fellow who's running for Congress from the 9th District right here in Bloomington area and all the way down to the Ohio River, plus his partner and campaign manager, Helen Plagman. Thanks for being on Big Talk.
How are you today?
I'm swell. Helen,
thanks for having us.
What would make you want to run for Congress?
When we take a look at how the world is currently in our in America, how we interact in America, we are on another wavelength than where we have ever been before. It feels like the administration at the head of the country is preaching nothing but hate, taking away programs. Slowly but surely, it feels as if there is more fear every day as we turn on the television, as we look on the internet, as we do the everyday mundane small stuff we do. It feels like we're having to work just a little bit harder. And every time I look on social media or we're doing any sort of event, there's always a feeling of, for me anyway, of a sense of foreboding because we're not taking care of what we're supposed to be taking care of. We're not taking care of each other. We're not taking care of our families like we need to be. We're not getting paid enough. A lot of people are suffering needlessly. There are plenty of issues that we could go through, but what it really comes down to is a systemic, fundamental change at the very top of the ladder, and doing our best to be a dissenting voice for the people who really need it, the disadvantaged people who really need it in this country. There is another level of greed that's been witnessed in this country that we cannot continue to let happen.
What can you do about this?
that all I can do is try to empower others, and with a bigger voice and a bigger platform, and running on the idea that we're not necessarily trying to change people, we're trying to change the conversation that we're having.
You've never run before. You're not a known politician. Apparently, you don't soften your words. You speak plainly. Now, let me give some examples. You have written, oil pipelines should be considered monuments to our laziness as a people. You've also written, coal mines should be considered cancer sores upon desecrated landscapes. And one more, if I may. Corporate greed should be considered a mental illness. Should you tone down your rhetoric?
I think that I think no matter what, if I'm speaking to someone and I'm not being honest, I feel that I'm putting them at a disservice. I have very, very staunch views about environment, about prison reform, about drug reform, about how we treat one another, about how we use education in our lives. I mean, there is so much to be gained by being honest about each issue.
When did you make the decision to go ahead and run?
I made the decision to begin at least telling people that I wanted to run for Congress about 4 or 5 months ago. We officially began the campaign on the 30th of last month, September 30th. That was when we had our website launch. And we were in Mitchell, Indiana, and we talked about some stuff that we met with the Democratic ladies there. They were a fine bunch of ladies. It was we had some cake and some ice cream, and it was good times. But I wanted to see how they felt about the message, about the campaign message, what I would have to say, and everybody seemed fairly positive. We've decided not to accept any campaign donations until we felt it, at least that we could have some sort of positive feedback. Because I wanted to make sure that as a politician, that the words that I'm saying will have some sort of positive impact, and that people want to hear what I have to tell them. I mean, I want to be honest.
Now, you're going to be driving all over the district. That's a lot of travel. You're going to have to buy people lunch. You're going to have to put out campaign materials. Where's the money coming from?
Well, the great part about trying to get started with the people-driven campaign is that we want to try and get those small donations. We're not trying to get we don't want any big money. I'm not looking for any corporate money. In fact, I was telling Helen just the other day about how I would feel uncomfortable if someone tried to donate more than $100 or something. I couldn't even imagine someone donating $1,000 to a campaign, or the idea of money in general kind of makes me feel, I hate that there's money in politics, that it has to be there. But I do understand that there's fundamental small stuff that we can do that can reach a broad audience, and we don't have to have a lot of money to do that. But we also are going to make sure we're hitting all those events. We do want to be hitting the ground. We do have a county-by-county plan to make sure that we're talking to regular, everyday constituents, hitting the lower-income areas in every single county, and making sure that people understand that we're there to try to solve their problems, not hitting up those big-money donors. People are definitely receptive to what we're talking about.
What distinguishes you from the others who are running? And right now, there are 3 others. You're the 4th.
Yes. Well, as a native of Indiana and a born and raised right here in central Indiana, I have a unique perspective on what it means to be a working person, what it means to be a family person. I guess if I was to be put into a category, I'd probably be called a grassroots guy. Mm-hmm. I'd probably be called someone that is trying to unify, someone that's trying to build a broad coalition. We want people to understand that I want to try to bring young people back into politics. I feel like I can do that. I feel like I can reach a broader base of people. I feel like that my voice has been saying these same things for a very long time.
One of your inspirations for running was a fellow by the name of Bernie Sanders.
Yes, sir. I love that man. He is such a good man. I've told so many people over the last year and a half how there is no such thing anymore as a politician that is as well-meaning as that man. Hmm. I feel like he's always got the back of the American people. It's a real shame that we as a country weren't able to see him into office, in my perspective, because I feel like we'd be feeling a lot different. I feel like we'd be feeling good about ourselves much more than we do now. I feel like everyone's filled with the next whatever the next Twitter bomb is going to be.
Yeah.
And wondering what that next news cycle is going to bring. And what Bernie would have brought is real sanity and would have made me feel like finally there's someone in power that really that gives a damn.
Brandon Hood. He's a working man. He's running for Congress in the 9th District from Indiana. He's here with his partner and campaign manager, Helen Plagman. Thank you both for being on Big Talk.
Thank you very much.
Hood knows what's good.
And that was Big Talk producer Michael Glab speaking with Democratic candidate for the 9th Congressional District, Brandon Hood. This episode and all previous episodes of Big Talk are available at our website at wfhb.org. An extended version of this interview is available online at electronpencil.com.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Coming up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, the pros and cons of needle exchanges. The opioid crisis is raging and solutions are elusive. We have asked what your thoughts are regarding needle exchanges. Do they help or do they enable?
I definitely think it needs to be in place because of all the diseases that are getting spread throughout Indiana. Definitely something needs to be happening because it's out of control here in Indiana.
I live in Bryan Park Neighborhood Association, and I wasn't able to attend the meeting, but they just had a meeting with the police about what happens near the neighborhood. And I do know that there's some really high numbers of needles going out and not all of them are coming back. I think we got to do something. And it's just a matter of what's the best thing. I don't think it's enabling. My beef would be with the pharmaceutical companies. Illegal use is part of their bottom line. And that's really disturbing to me.
I believe it's just plain stupid, you know. You don't want to put dirty stuff in their veins. And you want to stop diseases and stuff like that? Stop using dirty stuff. Dirty needles.
Honestly, I don't know much about it. I know that we've got a couple of needles next to our mailbox that I called the health department about maybe a month ago, and they still haven't been picked up. They're sitting there in a Snapple bottle.
I am not informed enough. It's not a part of my world.
The idiots enough to use this. Let them use them. I don't care. They want to kill themselves, kill themselves.
I think needle exchange programs are a wonderful idea. I think they save lives. I think they help stem disease and epidemic. I think they're altogether a positive thing. I can't really understand the rationale of those people that oppose it. It's just flawed thinking. That's my opinion. I applaud the program here. I read in the newspaper that Lawrence County dropped it, and that's because they're Bedford.
I don't know. That's a hard one. I guess for safety reasons, I certainly would be interested in it. But I sure don't want to give the impression that I in any way support people that are choosing that way of life. I mean, I want to support them in that I wish that they would stay healthy. So I suppose that would mean I would be for it.
As a recovering addict, I don't feel they work. They're just enabling.
You mentioned that you're a recovering addict.
Yes, sir.
Is that from heroin?
Methamphetamine and heroin.
What helped you recover?
I actually cold turkey. I've done it by myself, a couple AA meetings and A meetings.
I don't have a strong opinion one way or another. It seems like they're saying you're just facilitating it. What I think you should do is give them a safe place to do their drugs. The legality of it should be taken off the table altogether. They want to get high, give them a safe place to get high with therapists and spiritual people to talk to them when they need help. That's what should be done, not give them needles.
So I think that the country is in agreement that the science is behind needle exchange programs. It's one of the tools to reverse the opioid epidemic. And it's something that we should be embracing and we should be utilizing. And people that are involved with the needle exchange are 5 times more likely to get help and get into treatment. So we're basically saving lives with it.
It's a great idea. I can see why people would be against it. You know, it seems on face value, I could see why people wouldn't be too into it. Encouraging, they could think it would encourage drug use, but I think people are going to do their drugs, so you might as well allow them to be safe about it.
I think it's a good way to keep things safer, and as long as it is accompanied by some education, I think it's a good idea.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Alex Davis and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Pervosky. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
If you go to iTunes or some other podcasting app, you can have the show delivered to you directly. Just go to the store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show. It's coming up next here on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.